Hi, I'm Hannah Sparrow. As a behavior analyst, I'm here to connect the science of behavior to everyday life. Join me as I reveal the secrets of why we do what we do and give you tools for how to change habits. Welcome back. Today, we're going to talk some more about applied behavior analysis, what's wrong in the system, and where that's coming from. But it's not to rant, it's to set the stage for, well, what can we do about it? And today, I want to build more on the last episode where Kevin Koo and I were talking about the climate of ABA. Where did that come from, and why is it the way that it is, not just on such a large scale that we were discussing, but I think the first step that needs to be looked at is that as clinicians and as a field, we will not overall do any self-reflection. If we perceive something to be a certain way, we're going to go do research to back up our hypothesis. Well, research, I've seen some research, it can be skewed because you go in at an angle. But when you're serving other people and they're voicing, hey, there's a problem with your system and your treatment, and you come back and say, no, there's not, I think what's also missing, and what's missing in a lot of different fields, is empathy. We're not putting ourselves in our client's shoes. Without empathy, how can you understand and how can you evolve your treatment to be best treatment? How can you call it the best if it's only from your perspective? So with no self-reflection on realizing that you have no empathy, it also leads into what I think our field has developed in rigidity. I think the rigidity comes from different things. I think, first of all, we have who the clinicians are. Like if you have a large percentage of a specific culture and gender running everything, there is going to tend to be a bias, unless that population can realize that they have a bias. And realizing you have a bias requires self-reflection. But if you're not doing self-reflection, you're like, oh, it's in the books. It's in the research. It works. This is the way we do it. Well, not necessarily. It's like saying every single cake should be made the exact same way and we all love the exact same cake. No. Why are there different brands of cakes and different flavors of cakes? Because we're all different and we all enjoy different things. But cakes all have the same basic ingredients. You got your flour, you got your sugar, you got your eggs. Those are your basics. Well, if we don't look at treatment like that, we're going to say, oh, this chocolate cake of this brand, this is what works for everybody. But that's not so, because it doesn't even apply in other areas of life. I think the rigidity also comes from a theory I have. I heard from somebody doing some research. And again, I know that research can be skewed, but it's just a theory. And I think there's enough details to potentially back it up down the road, that the type of personality that our field attracts tends to be a personality that does not connect well with other people, does not think in other people's shoes very easily, not for any ill intent, it's just not their strength. They tend to want to care for, which is good, but it burns them out doing paperwork because paperwork's not their thing. But it also attracts people who like a system and a format and a curriculum and a specific flow so they know what to expect. But here's the thing, they're jumping into a field of unpredictability. Like, we want the unpredictability or in order to create predictability. But if you never have unpredictability, it's not going to go anywhere. Like, why would you start treatment if everything's stable and where it needs to be? Like, we come in when things are needing to be changed, but yet we're attracting people who are rigid and don't want flexibility and don't want any variability. Another thing that's missing in our field, and to take into perspective if you're starting treatment, is how green is your BCBA? So to get your BCBA, you technically, depending on which route you take, sometimes it's 1,000, sometimes it's 750 hours in preparation. That's like your supervision that you get in order to sit for the board. Well, here's the thing. Textbooks only tell you so much. So if you're going through a special grad school, like I did, this specifically for behavior analysis, which my degree was in, working with teachers who have never worked with people, and you only have maybe 2 years of experience under your belt by the time you finish, you may have been an RBT, which is a one-on-one therapist, for a year before you started. By the time you're taking clients as a clinician, you've only been in the field for 3 years. And I can tell now how green someone is by the way they talk, by the way that they look at treatment, by the way that they describe things. I came in at very different, and I'm very, very, very thankful that I did, because my treatment wouldn't be where it's at today without it. I did treatment one-on-one, or overseeing those doing the one-on-one, kind of like the mid-level, for about a decade or close to it. by the time I actually became a BCBA. So I had, 8 years of experience before I started school. I haven't met anybody else with that. And if I have, it's very rare. Those 8 years made a huge difference when I took my own clients. But a lot of clinicians are green, and people don't realize that when they start, that you have a green BCBA, they're not really going to think outside the box, and they're rigid, and they don't understand empathy because that wasn't taught. To take data, you don't need to learn empathy. And that's not built into the continuing education either, or any supervisor training about how you need to have empathy in order to shape your treatment around your person. Your person doesn't jump into how you think treatment should go. It should be molded around that person, because ultimately it's about the people you're serving, not about, am I following these rules? What also leads to the rigidity and the rules are the ethics codes. We're a new field. Our ethics code keeps changing. And you have to realize that the ethics code, even people making the ethics, come from a specific cultural background, specific work experience, but we're still a new field. We're going to make mistakes like any other field does. Nobody has the perfect clinicians across the field, but we're still establishing and we're growing. That's not an excuse. It's just something that we need to be aware of as clinicians, but also those who are signing up for the treatment, do your research, look and see how long your BCBA has been doing this or who is supervising them, and pieces of information like that, just to be aware that if your clinician makes a recommendation when you're having treatment and in your head you're like, that does not fit me at all, like, you have the right to say, look, this is not going to work. What other options do you have? Whereas a clinician also should not just be making recommendations, should be asking questions. But it is a two-way street, like any relationship, just like with your own primary physician. You don't always just say, okay, I'll take those meds. You're going to be like, hold up, what do I have to do? Why do I have to do it? You're going to ask questions usually. In some cases, you don't. It just depends on what works for you. So I wanted to bring some of this up, again, not to rant about things, but to talk about the bad rep, because just the other day, I heard someone list a BCBA as evil. And yes, there are BCBAs who have done bad work. I will agree with that. And they have caused trauma to people. But we all accidentally can cause trauma. And it's our awareness and our self-reflection that needs to change how we interact with people to avoid that down the road. But we first, as clinicians, have to be willing to look at ourselves and look at our field. And once that awareness is there, then we can start talking about, well, what can we do about it and how can we change?
Thanks for listening to Sparrow. Listen again on Mondays and Fridays for more behavior talk. And in the meantime, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. And you can follow me on my socials at Sparrow and HannahSparrow.org. But the most important is I would love to hear your messages, because I want to hear what topics you want talked about.